George Zell was one of the 20th century's most celebrated conductors. Over the course of more than two decades, he turned the Cleveland Orchestra into one of the world's ranking ensembles for classical music. The power of his artistry and his tempestuous personality are remembered in a new biography called George Zell, A Life of Music. Vivian Goodman of member station WKSU reports on a man whose legacy still reverberates in Cleveland Severance Hall.
Biographer Michael Chari was Zell's sorcerer's apprentice. He was an assistant conductor for the last decade of Zell's tenure in Cleveland. And Chari vividly recalls Zell testing him on how many notes he could find in a chord when he auditioned for the job.
He sat down and played a chord, something like this. And he said, "How many?" I said, "Six or seven." He said, "Can you name them?" And I actually did name them. And passing that, then we went to the rest of the audition. I had the feeling, though, that if my ear hadn't been good enough, he would have said, "Thank you very much, but you may go."
Chari says even as a child prodigy, Zell was a brutal critic.
From the age of two on, he could sing songs in many languages. He had a wonderful ear. His mother was a sort of amateur pianist, and when she made a mistake, he would slap her wrist and say, "It's false, mother, it's false." This is a 2.5-year-old child correcting an adult, and he was a phenomenon.
At 13, Zell's parents sent him to Switzerland to be analyzed by Carl Jung. The conductor said it didn't do him much good, and interviews from the Cleveland Orchestra archives revealed that Zell grew up to be an unapologetic authoritarian.
"You have to be a person who can enforce his will, not in a brutal manner."
But he could be brutal when necessary, and that was evident from his first days in Cleveland, when he fired 12 of the orchestra's 84 musicians. Biographer Chari says the orchestra had already been decimated by World War II.
Lots of players left, went to the army, they were drafted, they went to other places. And so he felt he had to build by firstly recruiting first chair players and enlarging the orchestra, and unfortunately letting go players who were not up to the standards which were required to make a great orchestra.
The difference Zell made became evident in very short order.
The reviews were by very knowledgeable writers. Herbert Elwell was a composer. I mean, Mr. Elwell wrote, I think, after 3 years, "This is it. This is the orchestra we've been waiting for."
It was not an easy evolution. Chari recalls a rehearsal so filled with foul language, the musicians revolted.
And so at intermission, they refused to come back on stage, and they waited for Mr. Zell to make an apology. And he hemmed and hawed long enough for them to feel that he was at least constrained enough, so they decided they could go on stage and continue the rehearsal.
He was demanding, too, of the orchestra's board and managers. He hounded the board until it made $1 million worth of acoustical improvements to Severance Hall.
"History does not record any great orchestra that has not been operating in a good hall. Because in a bad hall, you cannot really develop a good orchestra."
Zell ran all four floors of Severance Hall, says double bassist Martin Flowerman, who recently retired after more than 40 years with the orchestra.
"From telling the cleaning crew how to clean the floors to ordering certain pencils for the library, Zell was the final word. No beards. Nobody could have a beard. The summer that he passed away, the end of July of 70, three members of the orchestra then started to raise a beard."
Zell was physically striking, especially on the podium. He was more than 6 feet tall, with a regal bearing. But biographer Chari says he was imposing without flamboyance.
"It was directed toward the music, toward the musicians, not to the audience. His gestures were concise, and expressive of the music, and very clear. He had a very thin baton, a very light baton, which he used very artfully.
While Zell was all business, he could also be kind, almost fatherly to his musicians. Michael Chari recalls overhearing a conversation between Zell and an orchestra manager about a violinist who was going blind.
And he said, "Poor man, I'm afraid I'll have to let him go at the end of the season." And the personnel manager said, "But Mr. Zell, this man has 2 more years to go before he gets a full pension. If he release him now, he'll get a very small fraction of it." And Zell said, "Oh, I didn't know that. Thank you." And he kept him on for 2 more years.
Michael Chari saw the end of a life of music when George Zell was dying of bone marrow cancer at University Hospitals in Cleveland.
He was lying in his bed, sedated, his elbow resting on the bed, but his forearm extended, and he was waving his hands, and his lips were pursed as if to whistle, but no sound came out. And obviously he was going over some great score that he loved.
Such was George Zell's intense commitment to the music. For NPR News, I'm Vivian Goodman in Cleveland.
And you can read an excerpt from George Zell, A Life of Music, on our website, npr.org. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.